This weekend starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Recovery efforts struggling. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As if small businesses weren't hurting enough from pandemic lockdowns, now hundreds of them have been victimized by looters. For many, doors will close permanently.
CEOs and business leaders are weighing in to voice support for protests across the country. How do they do it and maintain unity at the office?
On the investment front, advice from a personal finance expert on what not to do in the wake of the recent stock market rally.
And the newest coronavirus trend in the kitchen. Ordering enough takeout food to have leftovers.
It's been really interesting because people are going out to restaurants a lot less often, but when they go, they are spending so much more money, and that's been kind of a bright spot in an otherwise dismal market.
Annie Gasparo at the Wall Street Journal on the trend of leftovers. Well, the killing of George Floyd has set off a wave of protests, as you know. Many protesters have dispersed after recently imposed curfews. But after dark, some people have wrecked and looted businesses, straining an already fragile U.S. economy. Vandalism and theft at many large retailers in high-end business districts are delaying efforts to restart an economy that lost 40 million jobs to the COVID-19 pandemic, notwithstanding Friday's jobless report in which 2.5 million jobs were added in May. The damage to small businesses could be more devastating, potentially permanently closing doors. It's a story by Scott Calvert, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Scott, what did you see in Philadelphia?
The violence in Philly started in Center City, downtown, on Saturday evening. But then on Sunday, it started to crop up in different parts of the city. And one of those areas was 52nd Street. And over roughly half a mile stretch of this business corridor, you had dozens of businesses that were vandalized or looted, or worse, you know, to some extent. And it really ran the gamut. First of all, there were some that weren't touched at all, and there was one case where that we heard about where some local residents and a friend of the owner stood out front and implored the looters to leave it untouched, saying it was owned by a young black woman, and that apparently worked. You had some that had relatively minor damage, you know, broken windows, and people went in and maybe stole a couple hundred dollars and damaged computers and things like that. But then at the other end of the spectrum, we saw just complete devastation. There was a drugstore that was completely cleaned out. There was a clothing store that was looted and then set on fire, and it was just burnt to a crisp. You know, the interior was just coated in soot, and it reeked of the acrid smoke smell. There were other businesses that lost, you know, in one case, I think about $80,000 worth of merchandise. And then a fellow who has a cell phone store, sells jewelry and video games as well, he said he lost about $200,000 and found his store completely trashed. Mm.
And these places are not always fully insured, if at all, right? So recovery here is going to be very difficult.
Yes. Well, some of the businesses have said, absolutely, we are going to reopen, and maybe pretty soon. And that's obviously easier for the ones that, you know, sustained less damage. But we found a mix. You know, some people said, yes, I have insurance. But even that is not necessarily, you know, what it might sound like. The fellow who lost about $200,000 worth of merchandise, he said he has insurance and he's going to put in a claim and hopes to get a payout. But, you know, he said at the moment he has no money. He's just endured the 2.5 month closure because of the coronavirus pandemic. But next door to him, there was a business owner I talked to who doesn't have any insurance and he has no money. He's not even sure how he can make the June rent, which was due in a few days. And he doesn't know what he's going to do. Doesn't see any way to reopen because obviously you need money to buy more merchandise.
We're speaking with Scott Calvert, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. I just want to make sure I got these numbers right. You said major looting struck dozens of the city's 200 business corridors. That's just not just businesses, 200 business corridors.
200 business corridors, exactly. So I spoke to the acting commerce director for the city of Philadelphia, and that's where that figure came from. And she said if you add up all of the businesses that were hit across the city, it'd be more than 1,000. They don't have an exact count, but we're talking about lots and lots and lots of businesses. Some of them are chain stores or banks, you know, the Foot Lockers and Citizens Bank and McDonald's and things like that. But an awful lot of them are mom-and-pop stores, many of them owned by African Americans or immigrants. And these are places that generally don't have a lot of cash on hand, may have a hard time accessing capital, and are generally more vulnerable in the best of times. And these are not the best of times, of course. You know, again, these are places that just had to spend more than 2 months in many cases without any revenue coming in because of the pandemic, and now they're dealing with this destruction.
How about this owner you talked to, Mark Tancredi, who owned that Sunray Drugs, that pharmacy? What was his experience?
He was at home Sunday afternoon watching television news, and lo and behold, there he sees video images on TV of his drugstore there on 52nd Street being looted.
Wow.
He sees people rushing into his drugstore. It was closed. He had the metal security shutter pulled down. They got past that. They got into to the drugstore. He said that, you know, they took everything from the toilet paper to the copy paper. They stole all of the pharmaceutical drugs. They just took basically everything. And that was that store. He has a second pharmacy a little bit further west on 60th Street, and that one was burned to the ground. So, you know, both of his pharmacies right there took major hits. The one he can reopen pretty soon, he thinks, because it wasn't burned. But the other one, you know, as he put it, that's not opening anytime soon.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Calvert, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 13 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. First full weekend of June. What does business recovery look like in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic? We're joined now by Dr. Travis Cruz, Senior Director of Safety Strategy and Solutions at Grainger. Full disclosure, they are one of our sponsors, but we felt the information about how businesses can safely reopen is relevant. Travis, what's recovery look like these days?
Yeah, so I would say within business recovery, Gordon, we're essentially in the return to business phase. When you think of normal operations for a business, you think of emergency planning, you think of non-normal operations. We're essentially at the point where, you know, we've first been responding to the pandemic initially. We've gotten through that phase, and now we're focusing on business recovery.
You know, I've seen a little bit where it seems the cart might be ahead of the horse with some of these cities or states that have said, okay, you're good to reopen your business now with some restrictions in place. And the business is suddenly saying, well, I'm not actually quite ready. Or the owner himself or herself might say, I'm not ready personally, or my business is not ready because I don't have all these things in place. Are you guys seeing that?
Absolutely. So as you mentioned, there's, you know, local, state, federal ordinances in place, and certain areas have been more impacted than others. And, you know, part of our job is, one, to bring some of those insights to our customers. We help them think through that from a business recovery piece. But, you know, part of our job is to also instill confidence in their ability to return to work. And part of instilling confidence is making sure they have the right solutions from products, services, and resources to help them get there. But absolutely, we see that variation from customer to customer and region to region.
So how do you tackle that? Because, you know, as most people have said, there's no playbook for something like this. These coronavirus lockdowns have been brand new for everybody, including the people who made the lockdown rules the businesses who are trying to figure out reopenings? I mean, how do you plan for the next level when we're still learning what the new normal is?
Well, I think, first of all, I think you hit a very good point. A lot of folks were, you know, they have business continuity plans, they have emergency response plans, but in some cases, no one was really prepared for the level of social distancing and things that have taken place and the viral load that came with the coronavirus and how to deal with that. So the cool thing about Grainger is, you know, we have the benefit of calling on large, medium, and small customers, so that yields to experience. And with that experience, we've actually been able to develop a playbook or a recovery guide to help our customers and really non-customers think through the different phases of recovery. So those are some things that we've been doing to help establish a framework to get folks back to working, which is part of Grainger's mission.
Yeah. We're speaking with Dr. Travis Cruz. He's the Senior Director of Safety, Strategy, and Solutions at Grainger. We're talking about business recovery following the pandemic lockdowns. What else do you see here, Travis, in the coming, say, weeks or months?
Well, I think the new normal that we were talking about earlier, right? So I think that varies from organization to organization. I do believe organizations are looking forward to getting back to work, and they're being a little more aggressive with their return to work plans. They're testing out some of the solutions that were put in place. As you probably are aware, and your listeners are aware, there's many solutions that have been deployed around the new normal and new protocols, but they continue to evolve. So, you know, as far as what's coming down the pike, I would say that continuing testing of these new protocols and new control strategies for different workplaces, including healthcare, government, manufacturing, and commercial. We're just seeing a wide variety of new solutions, and some are working well and some need to be improved. And I think with the current solution approaches that are being deployed out there, they continue to evolve. So I think organizations are going to continue to monitor the effectiveness of what they've deployed, and they may have to go back to the drawing board to look at new solutions.
Along those lines then, Travis, have you gotten a sense so far of, say, a particular industry that seems to be experiencing more upheaval than others, or one that might be up for the most change going forward?
So as far as I think the change is going to be spread across the board to all industries. So when you think of, you know, many of the new protocols that are being put out there, you know, quarantining, social distancing, remote work, those types of protocols. I would say if one industry has been hit hard, it's the industry that's really never stopped working, and that's healthcare.
Thanks, Travis. Dr. Travis Cruz, Senior Director of Safety Strategy and Solutions at Grainger. 22 minutes after the hour on this weekend. Thanks for being with us. When shelter-in-place orders went into effect across the country in March, many Americans quickly sought refunds for hotel bookings, airfare, travel expenses. But now that states have relaxed some social distancing measures, Americans have gone full circle and are planning road trips. But where should you stay? Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
If you're planning a summer vacation, you may be weighing the differences between Airbnb and hotels. Which is safer? Well, Elizabeth Buchwald of MarketWatch has examined the risks and safety of each option and joins us now. Elizabeth, what's the very first step you should take in planning a vacation?
The first step you want to take is researching where you're going. And the best way to do that in terms of if cases are spiking and what the restrictions are, you're going to look at the local news. You're going to look at local health resources, because while the CDC is a great resource, they don't have the most up-to-date local information. So that's first and foremost. And then you get into a whole other thing of who are you traveling with and precautions you're going to take along the way.
All right, let's talk about who you're traveling with. If you're with the family you've been with all along, you're in pretty good shape. What about others?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If you're with that family and or roommates too, just people that you're living with, you're okay. But with others, that's going to increase the risk because you're circling with more people, and we know that this disease typically spreads from person to person contact.
Let's just assume that you're going to drive. We won't talk about flying right now. If you're driving, especially a long distance, how can you plan your trip regarding what you're eating along the way and these conflicting reports about what bathrooms you can use? Certainly, you're going to need one.
Yeah, it's difficult, as you said, too. You want to research rest stops ahead of time and take planned breaks so you're not kind of searching around and running into a messy situation where one of the passengers has to go to the bathroom and you just can't find one. In terms of food, obviously best to pack things in advance, but drive-thrus are a great option and curbside pickup, which obviously a lot of food places are doing.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Buchwald of MarketWatch. All right, let's talk specifically about Airbnb. Some people say that's better than a hotel. Some don't. Let's start with the advantages of Airbnb.
So the first advantage there is that you're going to be interacting with less people. That's the nature of the Airbnb. You check into your place. Sometimes you don't even see the host. It's done electronically. And you're there in that room. No one else will be entering that space but you. So that's the big advantage there. The disadvantage, I would say, is that because of the nature of Airbnb and that hosts have a lot of flexibility with how they design their places and what amenities they offer, that also applies to cleaning standards. And they can take on this enhanced cleaning protocol, which Airbnb rolled out, but they haven't released publicly yet. They can take that on, and they'll have a little badge on their listing saying that they're following this. And it's a pretty strict set of rules, presumably. So, you know, you'd get that, but it's not like a hotel where they have to follow certain strict guidelines.
So for an Airbnb, you pretty much have to take the host's word that they've done what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, too, that because Airbnbs, unlike hotels, rely a lot on reviews and whatnot, you know, it's their prerogative to also please the guests coming, and they don't want a bad review in terms of cleanliness, and they certainly don't want one of their guests to contract COVID. So you have that going for it, too.
This weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with MarketWatch reporter Elizabeth Buchwald. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. First weekend of June. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, coming up this half hour. Should businesses speak out about social issues? Also, what not to do in this stock market rally? Plus, what's trending in kitchens? And moments of solidarity between police and protesters. That story in about 20 minutes. High-profile CEOs and business leaders are weighing in to voice support for protests across the country, including Apple, Target, Microsoft, Google, and Merck, to name a few. More on the trend from Tara Rethor, CEO of Strategy for Real, a business consulting firm in Northern Virginia. Tara, how do you see this?
You know, what happens in the world and regionally and in your community, that affects your business, if only via your own staff. Many of the companies that we've been hearing about are very, very much household names. They're customer outward facing, very B2C. But it's every business that has some kind of relationship with and feels the pressure or the impact of what's going on around them. So I think it's really important for business leaders to be aware of what's going on and to be mindful of how that might impact their own staff and their customers.
All right, so a conversation is necessary or recommended, say, with staff and or customers?
You know, conversations with staff, in my view, are very welcome and very important. It's a great way for a CEO or a senior leader to demonstrate and to live their values, to really connect the mission or the purpose of the organization with what they're doing and saying, their decisions and actions on a regular basis. So I think a conversation is definitely warranted. Anecdotally, what I'm hearing from lots of folks is that when someone does that publicly, when someone makes a public announcement or a public pronouncement, it has that much more weight. It carries that much more value and impact for their own staff, let alone for the others, their stakeholders that they deal with on a regular basis.
So if you work for somebody who expresses an opinion on what's happening and you don't like that opinion, at least you know where you stand. You may say, I like my job. I like this company. I don't care for my boss's opinion. However, I respect the fact that he or she has put that opinion out there.
Well, I think that's absolutely true in that, you know, we always want to be transparent, direct, and honest, and then couple those words with actions. It's not about do I agree or disagree, but it is about having the environment in which you can have these open dialogues so that we can learn and educate each other on what's going on and how we feel. I think it's always easier to be able to decide for ourselves how we want to show up when we know what environment are we showing up into, what are we dealing with. And I do think it then allows others to have the power to take those own decisions for themselves. How will they show up? How will I as an individual and a person show up?
We're speaking with Tara Rathore. She's the CEO of Strategy for Real, a business consulting firm. We're talking about should businesses speak out about social issues. What about silence here?
Silence, not always golden, right? Just as we were just saying, you know, you need to be able to, the silence can create a message. So if you want to tell your own story, if you want to control the narrative, silence is going to do that for you. You might as well take control of it and be sure that you're talking about it in the way that you want to talk about it, that you can be explicit. And again, connecting it back to your purpose, to your values. Where do you stand? What do you believe? And then your actions in how you respond and how you speak about it will tell people the extent to which you live what you believe. There's a lovely story in CNN this week on June 2nd around Doug Parker, who's the CEO of American Airlines. He was traveling on Southwest. And what's lovely about the story is that he was literally caught living his values and not speaking out specifically, not saying anything in that moment. He was caught. He was doing what he said he was going to do, which is to educate himself and to read a very compelling book about the topics that with the person not knowing who he was in the first place. So I think those kinds of actions, those kinds of messages that we send in how we behave as well as what we say, those things are the things that people remember, and that's what really has the greatest impact.
All right, Tara Rathore, CEO of Strategy for Real, a business consulting firm in Northern Virginia. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for spending time with us. Millions of investors are sending a message. The global economy will soon recover, and corporate earnings won't be far behind. That doesn't mean we won't get many more coronavirus-related deaths, of course. But Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com, the personal finance website, says investors are betting that those deaths won't stop the recovery, which is why they've bid up the stocks. He put together a list of things he would not do right now. Jonathan set this up.
So it's been a roller coaster ride, obviously, this year in the stock market. We dropped more than a third from peak to trough, and then we've come roaring back. And this is the sort of roller coaster ride that really messes with our heads. And one of the things that a lot of people are going to be thinking about right now is, okay, I wrote out the decline, I hung tough, the market's come roaring back. That was really a rather unpleasant experience, and I don't want to go through it again. I finally made it back to something that feels like even. And should I cash out now before, you know, the whole thing goes down the tubes again? And my answer to these people would be no. What you got earlier this year was a taste of risk. And if you want to get that, have that risk rewarded, you're going to have to hang tough. So don't go for the old, I'm even, now it's time to get out syndrome. Hang tough so that you enjoy the returns the stock market is going to generate in the years ahead.
What if I'm retiring in January?
Well, if you're retiring in January, you should have enough in cash or short-term bonds to carry you through the first 5 years of your retirement. So yeah, you obviously have to play it more conservatively, but for your longer-term money, for the money that you're not going to spend for more than 5 years, that money, I would argue, should be, you know, out of conservative investments and in something more aggressive, and that more aggressive portion of your portfolio should include a significant allocation to stocks. I mean, let's think about it, Gordon. You know, look at where bond yields are today. You know, bonds have typically been a mainstay for retirees, but today, if you invest in high-quality bonds, you're going to earn a yield that is below or equal to the expected inflation rate. So you're not going to make any money in bonds years ahead. If you want to make money with your portfolio in the years ahead, you're going to have to be in the stock market.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. What are the other things you said not to do? You don't bet only on the S&P 500.
And as I say in the article, Gordon, I feel like a broken record on this. I mean, for the past decade, owning the S&P 500, those big blue chip stocks that we all know and love, it's been pretty much a one-way ticket to wealth. I mean, if you diversified out of the S&P 500, you bought smaller companies in the U.S., you bought developed foreign markets, you bought emerging markets, you have subtracted from your returns. And so as a consequence, a lot of people are like, why diversify? Let's just own these big companies that are so comfortable to own. And my answer is, you do not know what the next decade is going to bring. Just because something's won in the past doesn't mean it's going to keep winning in the future. If you want to be confident of having reasonable returns from your stock market investments over the next 10 years, you need to be globally diversified. And the fact is, you know, history tells us that if one particular part of the global stock market has done really well over the past 10 years, there's a good chance it's not going to do nearly so well going forward.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. It's 14 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately, I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now, you can keep your face looking smooth, too, or your beard looking clean with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Thanks for being with us. Is this happening in your kitchen? The coronavirus has made leftovers newly appealing to families isolated in their homes, eager to save time and money and minimize outside trips. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Not only are we ordering food for delivery, we're ordering lots of food for delivery. As Annie Gasparo of the Wall Street Journal tells us, many families want enough food for leftovers. Annie, what do order sizes look like these days?
It's been really interesting because people are going out to restaurants a lot less often. But when they go, they are spending so much more money. And that's been kind of a bright spot in an otherwise dismal market. We saw that last month, the spending rose about 18% per order at fast food restaurants. And fast casual restaurants that are more like Chipotle, that was up 15%. So that's a big increase right now, especially at a time when people are financially stressed.
You have talked to some of the folks who are ordering a lot. Why are they getting so much?
There is this mentality that if you're going to venture out amid a pandemic, it better be worthwhile. So people want to make that trip worth it. And with a lot of families struggling to balance working from home, kids at home without caretakers, and trying to homeschool their kids, it's just so convenient to have leftovers in the fridge for everyone to make their lunches.
How have some of the chains adjusted their menus to take advantage of this?
We've seen especially the fast food chains start to change how they market their meals. And instead of the normal individual meals, like a number one or a number two at any chain, they are doing these bulk things. So like Taco Bell has a build your own taco bar. At KFC, they've been marketing a new $30 fill up bucket, and they advertise it as one bucket of chicken for tonight's dinner and another bucket of chicken for tomorrow.
We're speaking with Annie Gasparo of the Wall Street Journal. I know in your story, Annie, some of the families kind of deconstructed some of the food and made it into something else. What's that about?
Yeah, I have been told that chicken nuggets from Chick-fil-A are great in fried rice. So you just add a little Asian seasoning to that. And they've also been using the, quote, guts of Chipotle burritos for toppings on eggs, like in an omelet, and even in salad, too, just putting it as like a taco salad.
How has this affected restaurants that may be already slowed down by the fact that they don't have as many workers on site as they used to?
It is a lot harder for the workers to put together these large orders. And even at places where they have all the workers they need, those workers are now balancing extra tasks, like having to do extra cleaning and make sure that they have distance between each other or people that are ordering. And so it is harder to fill larger orders when you have these other pressures on you.
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenko with Wall Street Journal writer Annie Gasparo. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
For the ones we trust to always be there. For the ones caring for others. For the ones who keep things going, no matter where they are. In extraordinary times, extraordinary people step up, like the ones standing guard and standing on the front lines. And the ones who are staying apart while still working together. With your efforts, we will get through this. We're grateful for all you do. Visit Grainger.com for resources that can help as you create your recovery plan. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're all in uncharted territory, looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Some moments of unity at a time when unruly behavior like looting and rioting can steal headlines. In an impromptu moment, protesters in Washington, D.C. sang Lean On Me by the late Bill Withers in the midst of their demonstration near the White House. Singer-songwriter Kenny Sway led the concert and sang a special rendition of the song with the crowd.
Have a problem that you understand. We all need somebody.
There was a viral video of New York police kneeling with demonstrators Sunday. We also saw images of police officers in Santa Cruz, California, Norfolk, Virginia, and other cities standing alongside protesters in support. Kneeling cops were also seen in Coral Gables, Florida, and Des Moines, Iowa. Joseph Wysocki, the police chief in Camden County, New Jersey, said he never thought of doing anything else when he joined protesters. For the city of Camden, long known for high crime rates, ABC News says the police demonstrating alongside protesters is the continuation of years of efforts to bridge ties with residents since 2013, when the county police department took over public safety from the city's police agency. For Jennifer Koshenko, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.